It's 8 p.m. and time for Outbeat Radio.
You're listening to Outbeat Radio, a program produced by, for, and about the LGBT community in Sonoma County. We air each and every Sunday at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB-FM. This is Outbeat Now, and I am Jeff Basham. I'm in studio tonight with my co-host, Greg Moralia. We'll be speaking with Lisa Longhurst of Food for Thought about Dining Out for Life and Eric Blum of the Human Rights Campaign about their Buyer's Equality Guide. We'll tell you about the Outbeat Radio Season of Giving program, and in the second half of the hour, Greg will interview Tristan Silverman and Monica Canfield-Linfest on Outbeat Youth. It's a packed hour to start off your holidays right. But first, the Outbeat Radio News with Greg Moralia.
Good evening. This is your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, November 28th, 2010. I'm Greg Moralia. A United Nations panel voted this week on an amendment to remove sexual orientation from an anti-execution resolution. The resolution was passed 79-70. The vast majority of countries in support of the change were African or Arabic. Veteran gay rights activist Peter Tatchell said that the move was a shameful day in United Nations history and would give a de facto green light to the ongoing murder of LGBT people by homophobic regimes, death squads, and vigilantes. The resolution was introduced by Morocco and Mali and called for the word sexual orientation to be replaced with discriminatory reasons on any basis. The resolution, which the UN votes on every 2 years, has contained a reference to lesbian and gay people since 1999. It condemns extrajudicial, summary, and arbitrary executions and other killings. It still includes references to a variety of other groups, such as human rights defenders, religious and ethnic minorities, and street children. Carrie Allen Johnson, the executive director of the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, said the vote was a dangerous and disturbing development for gay people. Here in the United States, researchers have shown that taking a single daily pill containing two HIV drugs can reduce the risk of contracting the virus by an average of 44% and by more than 70% if the subjects take most of their pills. The study involved nearly 2,500 high-risk gay men, but experts hope that the results will be applicable to other populations considered to be at risk for contracting the virus. Several studies are already underway to determine if this is the case. Cornelius Baker of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS said, "The national AIDS strategy introduced by the president in July called for reducing the U.S. epidemic by 25%. If we can prove this works and get this strategy into communities, we can reach that goal much quicker than anticipated and move further to more goals." Experts agreed, however, that there's no reason to think that it would not be successful in other groups, although it must be tested. And here in California, the statewide LGBT advocacy group Equality California plans to continue promoting marriage equality and pro-gay candidates despite shutting down some of its offices in a cost-cutting move. Contributions and grants to Equality California were down from about $14 million in 2008 to approximately $6 million in 2009, according to the group's 990 tax form. Equality California Executive Director Jeff Kors said, "We're in a sound and healthy financial situation. That said, given the economy, it's important to continue to work to increase the donor base and get more people to support the work, not just of Equality California, but all LGBT groups, and to really watch expenses. They will keep open an office in Sacramento, San Francisco, West Hollywood, Los Angeles, San Diego, and Chowchilla Valley." And here in Sonoma County, in acknowledgement of World AIDS Day on December 1st, Face to Face, our local nonprofit organization serving Sonoma County since 1983, will begin offering confidential rapid oral HIV testing every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m., beginning November 30th. No appointment is needed. A donation of $15 is requested, but no one will be denied due to the inability to pay. The donations will be used to support expanding the program. The face-to-face office is located at 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. The new testing program is a partnership with another local nonprofit, Drug Abuse Alternative Center, where the test is also available. The collaboration is an effort to expand accessibility and outreach and to make it easier for anyone to get tested and to receive the results in just 20 minutes. The Sonoma County Department of Public Health estimates that there are more than 2,000 Sonoma County residents living with HIV. Now here's what's coming up in our community this week. In observance of World AIDS Day, a candlelight vigil will happen the night before, on Tuesday, November 30th, at 6 p.m. at the Sonoma Nesting Company, located at 1651 Main Street in Guerneville. Afterwards, the Rainbow Cattle Company will host a special Give Back Tuesday, during which 20% of all drink sales will be donated to the AIDS Nutrient Bank. There will also be a raffle. On Wednesday, December 1st, on World AIDS Day, Out in the Vineyard and Shania Davis will host a candlelight vigil in front of Sonoma's City Hall at 5 p.m. Dining Out for Life happens Thursday, December 2nd at 69 Sonoma County restaurants, which will donate 25 or 50% of their sales to Food for Thought, Sonoma County's AIDS food bank. For more information about LGBT news and calendar events, go to www.gaysonoma.com. And if you have an event you would like to share on Outbeat Radio, you can tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Our first guest tonight is Food for Thought's Development Director, Lisa Longhurst. She's here tonight to tell us all about Dining Out, which happens this coming week. Lisa, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Lisa, why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been in Sonoma County?
Great. I've been in Sonoma County since I was born here. I have lived all over the world and came back about 6 years ago. I have been working with Food for Thought now for about 15 months and am thrilled to be involved with Food for Thought's mission.
Well, great. As the development director, tell us about what you do for Food for Thought.
I'm responsible for all funds that run our programs. We are a nonprofit grassroots agency dedicated to meeting the needs of folks with HIV and AIDS in Sonoma County, specifically nutritional needs.
Oh, very good. Now, I also know that Food for Thought provides other services. Tell us about those.
We do. We actually provide services to 650 people free of charge. We give weekly grocery bags of canned and boxed goods, fresh produce, some of it from our own organic garden, high-quality proteins and nutritional supplements, along with healthy snacks. And we deliver probably a third of all of our produce and groceries to our clients.
And that's all volunteer services, right?
It is. We have close to 600 volunteers across Sonoma County that do everything to support the very small five-person staff.
Well, that's just a great way to really give something back to people who need it most. If people want to get involved and become a volunteer, does Food for Thought have a website, or how would people get in touch with you?
We do. We have our website is www, of course, FFP, that's Frank Thomas Food Bank, .org, and our phone number is 707-887-1647.
Perfect. Well, we'll definitely repeat the website address and phone number at the end of the interview here. But tonight you're here to talk to us about Dining Out for Life. That's coming up this Thursday, December 2nd. Tell us more about this great event.
Sure. Dining Out for Life is a program that was started in Philadelphia about 15 years ago. And what it is a coming together of restaurants in a location, be it a large city or, in our case, Sonoma County. We've got 69 restaurants this year, and they will be donating 25 or 50% of their sales that day to us in return for us attempting to pack their restaurants.
Wow, 69 restaurants to pick from. I know the Dining Out event is one of the key fundraising events I look forward to each year. I mean, it really is a lot of fun.
It is. It's a wonderful day, and the feeling that evening and throughout the day when people are dining out is incredibly positive and community, and it's incredibly fun, frankly. My last year was my first year, and I had such a great time working at Willie's Wine Bar, and it was just wonderful.
So with that many restaurants involved, how do you manage that? I mean, do you try to get around to all of the restaurants, or do you have people that are at certain restaurants from Food for Thought?
Actually, we have 100 ambassadors that host at every single restaurant. It is their job to invite their family, their friends, and actually act as hosts or hostess at every one of our restaurants. They do promotion themselves along with welcoming every diner that comes in. They also introduce the diners to our special raffle that we hold at the will be drawn in January, but it's to win 2 tickets on Virgin America. It's their opportunity to really talk about what the food bank does. Every one of our ambassadors volunteers for us outside of just that day, so they understand what we do and why our food bank is so special.
So tell us about some of the restaurants that are participating this year and where they're located in Sonoma County.
Great. Well, from Healdsburg to Petaluma, Occidental to Sonoma, the options are every meal are endless. We have some new restaurants this year, which include Bruno's on 4th in Santa Rosa, Lynn's Thai in Cotati, and then some of our returning restaurants, again, all cuisines, all price points, from Carmen's Burger Bar and Mambo's Pizza to our 2 Michelin star rated restaurants, Restaurant Mirepoix and Farmhouse Inn and Restaurant. It's very thrilling to have Restaurant Mirepoix, who has supported us every year they've been open, to get a Michelin star. We were so thrilled for them.
Oh, yeah, that is a great honor for them.
You know, I do want to add just a couple of things. Of our 69 restaurants, we have 6 restaurants that are not just donating 25%, which, of course, is so generous, but we have folks who've chosen to go above and beyond, and those are folks who are donating 50% of their day to us. And we also have 23 restaurants that are including alcohol. And for most folks going out for a meal to be able to enjoy their meal because they're big foodies or otherwise and know that they are going to be feeding other folks just because they ate out is a very powerful thing. And we really are grateful to Sonoma County for being so passionate about our biggest fundraiser of the year.
Well, great to hear. Well, we certainly admire the work that you're doing for the LGBT community here in Sonoma County as well. Lisa, give us your phone number and website one more time.
Sure. Our phone number is 707-887-1647, and I have 2 websites. Our regular website is www.fftfoodbank.org, and our Dining Out for Life website is very easy. It's www.diningoutforlife.com.
So don't forget, mark your calendars. The Dining Out for Life event is coming up this Thursday, December 2nd. We've been talking with Lisa Longhurst, who is the Development Director of Food for Thought here in Sonoma County. Lisa, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
I see one of my favorite restaurants on the Dining Out list, the Sea Thai Bistro in Montgomery Village. Tony, who's the executive chef and part owner there, told me recently he just earned a Michelin star as well, and they've supported Food for Thought for many, many years.
Our next guest is Eric Bloom from the Human Rights Campaign's Workplace Project, and he's here tonight with some information about a buyer's guide that you can use as you begin your holiday shopping season. Eric, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've actually been at HRC for about 5 years now. Prior to joining the Human Rights Campaign, I actually worked in the world of management consulting and decided to make the switch over to HRC to really kind of follow my interest and passion from a career perspective. And the Workplace Project here at HRC really did provide a great opportunity for kind of me to take a lot of my background and a lot of my experiences and apply it to making workplaces really inclusive for LGBT people.
Well, that's a big change to make for you, moving from a private corporation to a nonprofit. What was the draw?
You know, I think that it really was just a personal decision. I think that I had, made a lot of contributions to the for-profit world, and I think that, being an out LGBT member of the LGBT community, I really, experienced a lot of different workplaces, and I knew that, there was still a significant amount of work that needed to be done to make workplaces, you know, really safe and comfortable for LGBT people. And I thought I could make some contributions into that area.
I hear a lot about the Buyer's Equality Guide that the HRC puts out each year. What is it?
Sure. This is actually the fifth year that we've put out our HRC Buying for Workplace Equality Guide. And really what it is it's a repackaging of the information that we publish in our annual Corporate Equality Index survey. And the CEI actually has been published since 2002. And basically what it is it's an index, it's a survey that we provide to companies that rates businesses on their LGBT inclusion. And it's really had a tremendous amount of success since 2002. We had 13 businesses back in that year that scored a perfect 100%. Most recently, with the release of the 2011 survey, we had 337 businesses that scored a 100%. And so the Buyer's Guide, really, what we want to try to do is provide this information to the average everyday consumer to make it available so that they could make their purchasing decisions more in a more educated manner to really kind of take an understanding of, you know, what businesses are LGBT inclusive and to spend dollars at businesses that are.
Why is the Buyer's Equality Guide important to the LGBT community?
Well, I think it's really important because, you know, I think that LGBT consumers, and there's been a lot of research that's been done, are especially savvy, and they really do want to support businesses that support their own issues and topics. And I think that really is why the guide is so important, because it takes the information, it harnesses it, and makes it available for everyday people to support companies that support equality. And that's really the most important piece of it, and something that we really want to try to capitalize on is that whole idea of corporate responsibility and making sure that, you know, as it becomes more and more important to the everyday consumer that we're out there in the forefront and that we're making sure that the information that we have through our Corporate Equality Index is available to people.
What kind of businesses are accepted into the guide, and how does a business not listed become listed in the guide?
So basically, all the businesses that are in the guide are consumer-facing businesses. And so, you know, with regard to participation in the Corporate Equality Index, any business with over 500 employees can participate in the Corporate Equality Index. And the reason that we kind of have that bar is that, you know, obviously smaller businesses may not necessarily be able to meet the criteria that the Corporate Equality Index has established. And so, you know, the Corporate Equality Index looks at such things as domestic partner benefits, transgender inclusive benefits, having inclusive EEO policies. So it looks at some things that small businesses may not necessarily be providing to their employees or their employees' partners. And so that's why we have that 500 or more employee bar. And so then what we do is we basically take the cross-section of the businesses that we have, and we look at which ones are consumer-facing, and we include them in the guide.
So as I'm looking through this guide here, I'm seeing, you know, business names in different categories based on the type of business that it is, and then I see some numerical scores next to the business name. Can you explain what that scoring system is all about?
Sure, absolutely. So basically what we've done is we've taken the companies and the brands that for the businesses that have participated in the CEI, and we divided them into, you know, pretty easy to use common shopping categories. So you'll see in the guide that we have retailers, we have banking and finance, we have a home and garden section, and then within each of those different shopping categories, we've created a red, yellow, and green subsection. So basically, what we've done is we've divided scores, and scores range between 0 and 100. Between the green, yellow, and red. And so obviously the red companies would be companies that score have the lowest workplace equality scores. The yellow would be more moderate workplace equality scores. And then the green obviously would be our highest and best workplace equality scores.
So the companies that are listed here in the red that didn't do well, are these companies that applied and just did meet the grade, or did you actually seek these companies out for inclusion in the guide?
That's a great question, actually. And this year, actually, it's a little bit different than last year. We're actually including companies that have not responded to the survey for at least the last 2 years in the guide. Last year, we provided them with a score of a question mark. This year, we're actually providing them with a score based on the research and the information that we've been able to gather about the business. And so you'll see a lot of those businesses that are non-responders have very low scores, and so they most often than not do end up in the red category of the buyer's guide.
So have you ever seen a business that had a particularly high score one year drop their score the following year because of a policy change?
We have seen that. Usually it only happens as a result of a reclarification or someone didn't necessarily understand the question. But it has happened. For example, ExxonMobil some years ago when they acquired Mobil, they actually rescinded domestic partner benefits, and therefore their score dropped to a zero. And so there's been some examples of businesses that have rescinded policies. I would say that that's not necessarily the norm, but we definitely will like to make sure that, that folks know about those companies that are obviously doing, you know, very anti-LGBT things in their workplaces.
Speaking of businesses and equality policies, what is the latest on the Target and Best Buy saga that occurred earlier this year?
Sure. I think that, Target and Best Buy put themselves into a very precarious situation during this year's election cycle, providing funding for a PAC called Minnesota 4, which basically supported a very anti-LGBT candidate for governor of Minnesota. And so, recognizing that, Target especially has, really put themselves out there as being the darling of the LGBT community, the LGBT community reacted very strongly. And so what HRC did is, we basically contacted Target and Best Buy and 3M as well, because all of them actually did provide funding to Minnesota Ford and therefore Tom Emmer, to really kind of help them understand the situation. It helped them, to kind of be a sounding board to them and to let them know that, basically what has happened really is unacceptable. We provided them the opportunity to correct the situation, and they basically have not taken any corrective action. And so what you can see here this year is that their scores for all of these companies have dropped from a 100% to an 85. And the reason for that is that they basically did not seek to rectify the situation when called upon by the LGBT community, by HRC. And so, they didn't receive a deduction for their political contribution per se, but for the fact that they did not try to kind of rectify the situation.
So is that a subjective decision made in response to the actions of Target and Best Buy, or is that something that would happen to any company under the same circumstances?
It would apply to any company. I think that recognizing this specific situation with such a significant contribution, it had such an effect on the LGBT community, we decided that we would, we would invoke the one of our criteria, which would be a deduction of 15 points for, any organizational behavior that would seek to undermine LGBT equality. And so, that really kind of was, what we tried to kind of make sure that we kind of invoke it, on a very fair basis. Other examples of companies that get a deduction of 15 points would be businesses that, for example, provide direct funding to an anti-LGBT organization such as Focus on the Family or the American Family Association. So it has been, there are definitely companies that have received a 15-point deduction. This is the first time in this particular case of a political contribution. And it's something that, we're not going to be doing going forward, but recognizing the severity of the situation, we felt that, if the deduction wouldn't be necessarily for the political contribution, but more so for the fact that they really didn't try to, kind of come to the table with the LGBT community.
Okay. Well, I also see some companies listed here that are in navy blue, and they have a little HRC logo next to them. What does that mean?
Basically what we try to do is, provide a little bit of additional exposure to businesses that support HRC and that fund HRC. And those businesses that have our workplace equality or our brand, Blue Square with the yellow equal sign, insignia, are companies that are national corporate partners. And so those are companies that that fund HRC at a very high level, and so we just kind of obviously want to provide as much recognition to those businesses as possible.
Is there any other really fascinating news or exciting changes that any large corporations have made that we should know about as we venture out to start our holiday shopping?
Well, I just think that there are a large number of businesses that continue to look at the criteria of the Corporate Equality Index and continue to see, obviously the importance of being represented well on the buyer's guide, and have really made significant strides in creating a better environment. And I think that there's a lot of businesses that were pretty significant movers this year, you know, I think that, you know, Cracker Barrel Country Stores went up to a 55, which doesn't seem like a significantly high score, but, you know, recognizing that some years ago that there had been lawsuits taken out for them, you know, firing people because they were LGBT, that's a really significant step forward. They're actually engaging with HRC. Some significant progress from Kellogg's going from a 65 to a 100. Hershey going from a 100 to from a 70. So, you know, there's a lot of companies that really are doing some great work, and I think that, you know, looking at and doing the comparison between what companies are scoring really well and which ones are not scoring really well, and as folks are head out to the malls, to make sure to take the guide with them for sure.
Well, that's great. It's really nice to see something like this having a positive effect in creating some good change for our community.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, it's one of our most popular guide, and obviously one of our it's a very important guide around the holiday shopping period as well.
Well, where can our listeners get a copy of the guide?
Yeah, the newest copy of the guide, so the 2011 Buying for Workplace Equality Guide, is going to be released this coming week, and it will be available hrc.org/buyersguide. And one other note also, the guide is actually available as an iPhone application, and folks can download that application at hrc.org/iPhone. And so basically what we want to do is we want to put the information into people's hands in the moment that they're making those purchasing decisions, and that this iPhone application is one of the ways that we can do that.
And if you missed those web links, we'll have them available on our own website at outbeatradio.com.
We've been talking tonight with Eric Bohm of the Human Rights Campaign. Thanks, Eric, for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
But I got to tell you, I'm sure not looking forward to getting my shopping started this year. I mean, I've got a list full of people who already have everything. And if you're like me, the thought of searching for a parking place or standing in line at the mall just does not sound like a good time.
Well, Greg, for you and everyone else like you out there, I have the perfect solution. Or we have the perfect solution. This year, we invite you to join us for Outbeat Radio's Season of Giving campaign. By giving the perfect gift to that special someone without having to ever leave your home. Doesn't that sound good? Sign up for Outbeat Radio's Season of Giving campaign by making a donation in the name of that person who has everything to one of the many deserving nonprofit organizations here in the North Bay. When you sign up your donation, you can enter a holiday wish to that special someone that we will read on the air during our show on December 26th. I guarantee you that you won't find this kind of gift in any store, and you won't have to stand in a single line. All you have to do is go to outbeatradio.com and click on the Season of Giving link on the left side of the page. Enter your holiday wish, press Submit, and cross that name off your holiday shopping list. It really is the gift that gives so much more. It's a unique gift that helps our community and gives you a tax write-off at the same time.
Now that sounds perfect. I mean, positive images, PFLAG, face-to-face, the Russian River Sisters, Food for Thought. These are just a few of the incredible organizations that could really use your help. But you could really choose any organization you want. You know, maybe it's the American Cancer Society, your local SPCA, or even a scholarship program at a local school. I mean, it could even be a national organization, like my favorite, the Matthew Shepard Foundation, or one you most favor, a donation to any nonprofit organization will work.
What a great idea. And you know there are so many nonprofit organizations that support the LGBT community, and I know they are all struggling in this economy.
Well, we're going to take a quick music break, but stay with us. The Outbeat Youth segment is next. Support for Outbeat Radio on KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Far West Trading Company in Grayton. At their holiday reception and benefit on Saturday, December 4th, 10% of all purchases will be donated to Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank. Details online at farwesttradingcompany.com. Hi, this is Outbeat Radio host Greg Moralia. Join me for a premiere showing of The Anatomy of Hate, A Dialogue to Hope, a powerful documentary that reveals some of the most venomous ideologies of hate in our time. This film examines the white supremacist movement, Christian fundamentalism as an anti-gay movement, Muslim extremism, the Palestinian and Israeli conflict, as well as our own country's involvement in Iraq. You will hear from leading sociological, psychological, and neurological experts and hear stories of redemption told by reformed combatants. This film weaves tapestry that reveals both the emotional and biological mechanisms which make us all susceptible to acts and ideologies of hate. The film producer and director Mike Ramsdale will be there live to answer questions during a post-film discussion. This special event will take place on Thursday, December 2nd at 7 p.m. in the new Performing Arts Center at Napa Valley College. Tickets are free but are required. They can be ordered online at www.nvccjtc.org. You're listening to Outbeat now on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. That was the L.A. Gay Men's Choir with their version of Cyndi Lauper's True Colors. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment. Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth in the North Bay and beyond. We're here every month as part of Outbeat Now. We begin tonight by talking with Tristan Silverman, who hosted last month's After Out LGBT Writers Conference. Tristan, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you so much. How are you?
We're doing really, really well, and it's a thrill to have you on the air with us.
I'm thrilled to be on the air.
Very, very good. Well, tell us how you got involved with performance poetry.
I lost a bet.
Really?
This is a true story. Yeah, a friend of mine used to frequent a poetry house in Chicago every Sunday night called the Green Mill Cocktail Lounge. It's very famous and sort of legendary. And we'd listen to the poetry and the jazz. And one of the nights, about 4.5 years ago, we had a bet going, and it was a nonsensical bet, you know, like whether or not it was going to snow. And whoever lost the bet had to read a poem on stage. Of course, I lost the bet, and I read a poem. And Mark Smith subsequently runs that night, and he is the founder of Slam Poetry. So he's been running for the last 25 years.
Oh, wow.
This really awesome slam poetry, open mic, jazz poetry sort of event in Chicago, and he hosts it, and he came over and talked to me afterwards and was like, you are better than people who do this for 25 years. You should go in the slam. In fact, I'm going to make you go in the slam. And it was kind of incredible because I only had that one poem with me, and I wasn't really even writing much poetry, but one way or the other, I won the slam, which qualified me for another slam, which I won. And, you know, and then I think it was about one or two slams later, I was one of the, you know, winter champions of Chicago, and I was on a national poetry slam team, which was a semifinalist. I think it ended up 13th or 14th in the nation, and I was suddenly on the map, you know?
Wow. So it wasn't even a planned sort of thing. You just sort of fell into it.
Yeah, I kind of say I'm a novelist by nature, a screenwriter by trade, and a poet by absolute accident.
That's great.
You know, and I think that is, in a weird way, as an artist, I think that's sort of an ideal. You don't want to, there's a notion that our brilliance is accidental.
Right.
And as an ideal. I don't think that's really true, and as a teaching artist, it's kind of like my greatest enemy, you know, because you want people to not feel as if they work at their art or their writing or their skill, that they're going to lose their natural talent.
Uh-huh.
And but it is kind of interesting how, when you least expect it, if you take a risk, an opportunity will provide itself, you know?
Right, right, right. Well, tell us a little bit more about, you know, this kind of poetry and the performance and how it's all unique.
You know, you and I were speaking about this earlier, and I think I have a term for performance poetry. And I think, ultimately, it's kind of a riot industry. By that, I mean anybody can be a performance poet. Essentially, you don't even need to know how to read to be a performance poet.
Uh-huh.
And in that way, pretension, although it is present in some aspects of performance poetry, is usually not very successful. And some of the elitist qualities that you get in other art industries doesn't have the same kind of seniority, you know?
Right.
And anybody can, you know, be a champion. So in performance poetry, what's really wonderful is that you have the nerd poets, you know, and they talk about Star Wars or mathematics or, you know, and these guys, might, you know, could be in their 20s, could be in their teens, could be in their 40s, and they're talking about these issues that made them nerds in high school that they're suddenly champions for, you know?
Right.
And I think it really turns a lot of what is good or cool or popular on its head.
Sure.
And it makes our weaknesses or what we're maybe bullied for into something that is our strength.
Right.
And so academic poetry, in some forms, pretension is a kind of standard. And I think it's created an art form that a lot of people feel is, especially teens, feel is a little inaccessible. It's irrelevant.
Right.
They don't understand why it is. It should be important to them,
sure.
You know, in their everyday. But how is this going to get me through the lunch hour?
Right.
You
right.
know.
Well, there's no emotional connection to it. Right.
It's more immediate. Yeah. You know?
Sure. Well, they have no emotional attachment to something that, you know, they can't identify with or connect with, or that was written by someone they don't know or understand, I would imagine.
Right, you know, and it's funny because since winning those first few, four or five slams, right,
uh-huh.
I now consider myself a poet. I now read a lot of poetry, and I even read a lot of academic poetry. I read a lot of contemporary work and classic poetry, and I can enjoy it for its various elements,
uh-huh.
right, of what it provides. But it really is a shame to me that Walt Whitman and Robert Frost are some of the first few poets that are introduced to young people.
Right.
Because although they are very profound and important poets to sort of study and understand, I think that they are the least important to introduce the form itself to people.
Uh-huh.
And it's a shame to me. And so a lot of what my work begins with in terms of education is to say, okay, why don't we write poetry? And a lot of the times the words that get thrown out at me by young people are, it's boring, it's confusing, it doesn't make any sense, I don't care about what Walt Whitman cares about. In fact, if you dig at Walt Whitman, you probably do share some, you know, conflicts that he had.
Right.
But they're clouded in all this vocabulary that is archaic.
Right.
And so a lot of what I do is, okay, but, you know, I might show him a poet like Jeffrey McDaniel or Roger Bonaire Guard, who's a really well-known performance poet and slam poet, or Mindy Netafi, who's out of L.A., who runs the Right Now poetry nonprofit. And, you know, these poets who are talking about what it was like to sneak out of their house for the first time, or their experiences with their parents, or their experiences in high school, college, their first heartbreak, you know, in a range of different ways, you know,
right.
Anything from funny to emotional or dangerous feeling kind of poetry
uh-huh.
that kids will instantly respond to because, and they'll get how powerful poetry can be when somebody just sums up an entire experience that you've had in one tiny little sentence or one tiny little image. The relief is unparalleled.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, you do a workshop called Life After Out, and you
yeah.
did that here last month here in Sonoma County for some LGBT youth. Tell us about what goes on at these workshops and what you hope to accomplish for young gay kids.
Well, yeah. The event was actually sponsored by NAMI in Sonoma County, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And it's a great organization that provides advocacy and education and support to people experiencing ranges of mental health challenges, you know, with themselves or their their families. And when we say mental health, it doesn't mean a disability, right?
Right.
I think stress is a huge mental health issue. Stress affects our physical well-being, our emotional well-being, and I don't know a demographic that has a higher stress level than teenagers.
Right. Well, we certainly saw that in late September, early October, with all the young LGBT kids who were committing suicide.
Yeah, which is...
horrific.
It's a wake-up call, you know?
Yeah, it really, really is.
And, I mean, it's hard to see anything like that as a positive experience, but the reaction to me from a wide-ranging communities is it has to be, you have to at least absorb it and say, well, that is what you want to happen when something like this occurs on, and you can no longer ignore it, you know? And I think what I hope to see and what I plan to do myself is to kind of create opportunities for young people to seek out whatever they need, because I think what I truly believe at the bottom of everything is that whatever it is that keeps you alive is better than not being alive, you know, whatever that is, whether it be writing or dancing or whatever it is, and to really take young people seriously. And I think that that is as big of an epidemic as anything, is that we don't take bullying seriously, or we don't take what the experiences are as young people seriously. And I think that is why writing is so important. And when I was building the Life After Out workshop, that is the pedagogy. That's the basic truth that I come out of, which is you are important, and your experiences are not dumb, and they're not anything but the most prioritized thing in your life. And if we don't make space for young people to say, I am having a really hard time, and to not brush that off, I think is really at the sort of at the like smallest grain, you know, of the spirit. You know, if people don't think they're important for long enough, I think that's what happens, is that they have every justification or rationality to do something like end their life.
Right.
Or if they feel like nothing can get better, that shuts out an avenue.
Sure. Well, tell us in these workshops what you talk about in terms of helping LGBT youth work through their fears of coming out or being identified as gay through their writing.
I think art is a kind of magic, and I think it really can turn anything into a joy. I think every teenager who was petrified, sitting in the closet, metaphoric or not, were able to take that fear and turn it into a joy. I just try to imagine what the relief would look like, you know, and that is my goal. And I think a lot of the workshop is built around allowing young people to self-identify in a creative way and giving them chances to do that in a group setting and work with each other and build images and interact and actually just sort of build demonstrative statements like, let's break down stereotypes, and to do it out loud. And as common sense as that seems, what it does is it generates dialogue, and it actually gives teenagers language to protect themselves with, and so that if they feel attacked, they can have a confidence about what to say back. I mean, have you ever, did you ever experience any sort of bullying when you were younger?
Oh, sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Not for being gay, but for, you know, not being with that sort of in crowd.
Right, me too. I was not a questioning youth. I think I was slightly agendered, asexual growing up, but I was bullied, you know, pretty severely.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times what would happen for me is when I felt attacked, I would clam up. I would shut down. I would get nervous, you know, and anticipate, you know, what was going to happen. And I would be unable to verbally or otherwise protect myself.
Right.
And so a lot of what happens when I get together with a group of young people is I just kind of listen a lot. I ask a really simple question and let the dialogue begin. And it's kind of like just generate like a storm cloud of concepts, you know, like who are the scariest people or who are the coolest people in your school? Okay, what do they look like? And what are their best qualities? What are their worst qualities? What do you think is their insecurity? And you just sort of generate these word clouds, you know, of
right,
concepts.
Right.
And then from that, give them a crazy exercise like, okay, give all the different cliques in your school an animal. Okay, give them an object, you know, and you've turned those cliques into, you know, who knows, a candle, you know, a puppy candle or whatever. And then you do a weird poem around it. And so just to get them outside of the box so that they can maybe even identify with the people that they were formerly afraid of.
Sure.
You know?
And I have
Does that make sense?
Oh, it absolutely makes sense. And I have to believe that it provides an outlet. You know, all those emotions, all those fears, all those feelings that kids tend to keep bottled up inside, being able to express it in poetry, not just through writing it, but actually getting up and performing it, saying the words out loud and putting some emotion behind it has to be really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people have asked me how does writing help LGBT youth come out or battle the fear of coming out, maybe?
Uh-huh.
And I think writing, as a concept, is kind of risky, and it's not the, you know, it's not as cool as maybe skateboarding or Britney Spears.
Right, right.
Right. And so for me, some of what I do, you know, when I walk into a room and a bunch of kids think that a poet is coming in to teach them a workshop, they picture me wearing, I'm going to be honest, khakis. You know,
uh-huh.
And a tucked-in polo shirt or, you know, maybe a scarf and a sideways hat and to be, you know, very beatnik, right?
Right.
And the truth of it is I come in and I have a mohawk and I have tattoos, and which is not to say that that is why I'm a cool poet or something, but it changes it breaks the stereotype, right?
Right, right.
And the assumption of what I'm going to look like, and right there, that in itself will invite them in.
Right.
And then once they write it and they don't think it's boring, or the first time they read a poem written by another poet that they think is funny, then that also invites them in, and it's in itself, them reading a poem is risky. And so if you do that, if you take enough risks, suddenly taking a risk isn't as frightening.
Right.
And so some of the stereotypes of what it's going to be like for them when they come out, what's going to happen if somebody makes fun of them for being gay, doesn't seem as terrifying. They build their muscle around it.
Right. Right.
You know?
It's great work. Hopefully we're going to see some of these poets perform on our talent show that'll be airing at the end of May next year.
Yes.
But we'll hope that some of the people that attended the workshop on October 9th will go to the Outbeat Youth website and sign up. And
I certainly, I hope, and is this going to be aired?
Yes. Yes, it's going to air live on Sunday the 29th as part of Outbeat Extra. We're going to have a whole hour featuring LGBT youth talent.
Oh, that's awesome. And who's judging it?
Well, it's not a competition.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a... That's actually much better.
Right. It's not a competition. Everybody's invited to participate because we don't think that anybody is better than the other. We hope to feature their poetry and their thoughts and their emotions.
Yes, there's no bad art.
Right. Give people a mic and give them a chance to let the world hear what they have to say.
Well, I'll certainly be watching.
Excellent. Tristan, where can people find out more about Life After Out?
A couple different places. People can go to my website, www.tristansilverman.com. There's also and there's a website link to it, as well as, I believe, the website, I know the website for the actual event is www.lifeafterout.weebly, that's weebly.com, and they can sign up there, and they can send emails, because this is going to be an actual series, so this will be in rotation, and kids can be a part of the next one, and so on.
Oh, great. So it's, if they missed last month's program, they can catch another program here in the future. And we'll have those website addresses and email addresses posted on our show notes that you can find on the Outbeat Youth website. Just go to outbeatyouth.com and click on show notes at the top of the page. We've been talking with Tristan Silverman about her work as a poet and performer, or performer-poet, and her workshop called Life After Out. Tristan, thanks so much for joining us tonight on Outbeat Youth.
Thank you so much, Greg, and I'm excited to see the talent show.
And we'll be back right after this It Gets Better message from one of our listeners in Oklahoma.
Hi, I'm J.C. Knudsen, and I'm here to tell you it definitely does get better. I'm a 55-year-old divorced gay father of two sons, and I'm living the life I was meant to live. No matter where you are at in your life or who you are here for a reason, and that reason is to live your life to its fullest and be proud of who you are. Sometimes it may seem a little overwhelming dealing with so many issues at such an early age, but don't worry, we've all felt that way at some point in our life. You have a long life ahead of you, and there's plenty of time to decide what you want to do with it. You're so lucky to be a part of this world today, and while you may not think so at times, be patient. Everything will fall in place for you. Take a look at what we've accomplished in society today. We are lawyers, doctors, mayors, senators, actors, authors, just to name a few. I remember when Ellen DeGeneres came out on national TV. Look at her now. A recent poll named her the most influential and famous gay rights advocate in America. I know I will see many of your names in places you probably wouldn't think of at this point in your life. Please know you are loved, and there is a place for you, a place you will be proud to be a part of. And always remember, for those difficult times, there are people who want to help. Don't ever give up. Reach out at any time. We are all here for you. I recently wrote a book about my life, and it would have been very difficult to complete had I not known such courageous individuals such as you all are.
Thanks, Joe. And if you'd like to share your own It Gets Better message with us on the air, just go to our website at outbeatyouth.com and click on Share Your Story at the top of the page. Well, due to some technical difficulties, I'm not able to share with you my interview this month with Monica Canfield-Lenfest of the GSA Network about the upcoming Youth Empowerment Summit. However, I do want to share some details with you about this amazing event and encourage all of you to attend. Now, the Youth Empowerment Summit is an annual GSA leadership conference that happens every December in San Francisco. It's totally free, and it is an annual conference for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, and intersex youth activists and allies who are dedicated to defeating homophobia, transphobia, and creating a safe, supportive school for everyone. The conference is youth-planned and youth-led, and you'll find a variety of workshops, including ones on legal rights, safer sex, gender and sexuality, how to have a successful GSA, HIV and AIDS education, and much more. There'll also be a community resource fair where youth and allies can learn about services and organizations available to support you in the community. This year's Youth Empowerment Summit will be held at the Horace Mann Middle School, located at 3351 23rd Street in San Francisco. And most importantly, it's going to be on Saturday, December 11th from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. And they're also hosting a dance for the youth participants that'll follow from 5 to 8 p.m. Best part about it, it's all free. Breakfast and lunch is included. But you do need to register ahead of time. So go to www.gsanetwork.org. That's GSANetwork, all one word, .org. And again, if you missed that, we'll have that website on our own webpage at outbeatyouth.com. Well, that's it for this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can download our past shows on iTunes or from our website at outbeatyouth.com. It's also the end of our hour. Jeff and I will be back next month with another edition of Outbeat Now on Sunday, December 26th. We'll have all of your holiday wishes to read. Tune in next Sunday at 8 p.m. for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. Thanks for listening.